It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. If you paid any attention to world news between your Labor Day weekend picnics and barbecues, the one thing you probably heard was that President Obama said the U.S. does not have a strategy yet on ISIS in Syria. It's a statement that drew bipartisan criticism over the weekend. But did he really say such a bad thing? Let's get some context now with David Sanger, national security correspondent for the New York Times and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power. Hi, David Sanger. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good to be with you, Brian.
So the much-quoted line from the president last week was that the U.S. doesn't have a strategy yet on ISIS. But let's start this conversation by playing the entirety of his answer, which was in response to a question about seeking authorization from Congress in order to take action in Syria. So here's over a minute of the president responding to that reporter in full last week.
I am confident that as commander-in-chief, I have the authorities to engage in the acts that we are conducting currently. As our strategy develops, we will continue to consult with Congress, and I do think that it'll be important for Congress to weigh in, and or that our consultations with Congress continue to develop so that the American people are part of the debate. But I don't want to put the cart before the horse. We don't have a strategy yet. I think what I've seen in some of the news reports suggests that folks are getting a little further ahead of where we're at than we currently are. And I think that's not just my assessment, but the assessment of our military as well. We need to make sure that we've got clear plans, that we're developing them. At that point, I will consult with Congress and make sure that their voices are heard. But there's no point in me asking for action on the part of Congress before I know exactly what it is that is going to be required for us to get the job done.
President Obama with a 1 minute and 13 second answer to a reporter's question last week. And what broke out of that as the headline over the weekend was a few of the lines within it. We don't have a strategy yet, he said. And he said, we'll need to make sure that we've got clear plans, that we're developing them. At that point, I will consult Congress and make sure that their voices are heard. So, David Sanger, I don't know that there's been enough context around that statement on the Sunday talk shows and things like that. Is it such a gaffe, or is it such an unexpected crime to not have developed a strategy yet to fight ISIS in Syria when this is all so new?
Well, Brian, you know the old line, you know, a gaffe in Washington is being caught telling the truth in public. So that's a bit of what's happened here. Look, if one was developing a strategy too fast, your chances of having a set of tactics and calling it a strategy are very high. I was White House correspondent during most of the Bush years for Iraq and Afghanistan, and we had many tactics that were described as a strategy. A full strategy involves thinking through what your national goals are, what your objectives are, what your means are to accomplish those objectives, what all of the elements of power are that you can bring onto that, economic, diplomatic, military. And if somebody's popping up with a strategy too quickly, then there's reason to question whether or not it exists. Now, does that mean that the critics have no case here? Yeah, I think the critics have something of a case, only because while ISIS has cropped up fairly fast, although obviously they've been around for a bit, and some people have been warning of the threat. The Syria issue has been debated in this White House since the Arab Spring began.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was in March of 2011 that this whole issue really cropped up in Syria, and it was not long after that the president said Assad had to go. So I think it is legitimate to question whether or not the administration had an adequate strategy on Syria. And in fact, Hillary Clinton, in her interview with in the Atlantic made the point that she didn't think that they had a full strategy, that they never sort of fully confronted the issues. I think that's accurate. But in this particular case, I found it somewhat refreshing that the president came out and said, you know, I want to take my time and do this right.
And I mentioned that the president was getting criticism from both Republicans and Democrats for that statement. I guess, though it preceded what he said there in that clip on Thursday, what you just quoted from Hillary Clinton in that Atlantic Magazine article, kind of criticizes the president overall for not having a greater strategic approach to Syria. And here's Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, on NBC's Meet the Press this weekend.
I've learned one thing about this president, and that is he's very cautious, maybe in this instance too cautious. I do know that the military, I know that the State Department, I know that others have been putting plans together. And so hopefully those plans will coalesce into a strategy that can encourage that coalition.
Dianne Feinstein on Meet the Press, and this is WNYC FM HD in AM New York. WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River, New York and New Jersey Public Radio, as we talk about ISIS, Obama, Syria with David Sanger, national security correspondent for the New York Times. And David, White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest tweeted that there is a, quote, comprehensive strategy, unquote, on fighting ISIS, trying to clarify the statement that was, as he said, just about Syria. So is there a comprehensive strategy on fighting ISIS? And, you know, in fact, maybe we should digress for just a second, since you use the word strategy and the word tactics. I think they often get conflated, and some people think that they're the same thing, and then you'll get, you know, talk show hosts or politicians who say, well, they have tactics, but they don't have a strategy. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is fairly basic. A strategy is up at 10 or 12,000 or 30,000 feet. It is determining first what your national objectives are, where you want all of this to come out. Not an easy question in the case of Syria, because you know, to fight ISIS may be to support Assad, and we've already said Assad's got to go. So just figuring out where you want this to be a year, 5 years, 10 years from now, that's difficult enough. Then the question is, what are your objectives to achieving that strategy? And then what are the means to the objectives? Because if the means don't match up those objectives, for example, if you've declared outright you're never going to send ground troops, but to accomplish the objectives you need some operations on the ground, you've got a problem. So you've got to sort through all of that. Tactics are just whatever short-term move you're taking to defend yourself or make some temporary gain. So bombing the Mosul Dam and the ISIS emplacements around it are perhaps a tactic and perhaps a very satisfying one, but it doesn't constitute a strategy of how you would eradicate ISIS or what Syria or Syria and this netherworld between Syria and Iraq, right, and that whole border area would look like later.
So was White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest telling a lie?
I think he was overreacting a bit.
Overreacting, but he could he even have been making an accurate, truthful statement when he said there is a comprehensive strategy on fighting ISIS? Can you have a comprehensive strategy on fighting ISIS today without having one that includes Syria?
You can't even have one without having one that includes Iran, because in this is one of those areas where our interests and Iran's coincide at a moment, as you and I have discussed in many previous shows. We've got many big issues with Iran, chiefly the nuclear one.
And we've been reading conflicting reports since you raised Mosul, that Mosul is the glue that holds the self-proclaimed caliphate of the so-called Islamic State together, and that Syria, though Mosul is in Iraq, is the stronghold. What's your analysis? Can the U.S. push back on ISIS enough just by concentrating action in Iraq, or does the president have to address Syria? And I know you said just now they have to also address Iran, but just to fight ISIS, are they even clear among themselves that they need to have a military strategy in Syria?
Look, if you're in a world in which your opponent can move into a safe haven, then the answer is, and you're not certain you want to operate in that safe haven, then the answer is, no, you can't have a full strategy for doing this until you figured out the safe haven. Boy, we learned that lesson with the Taliban going in to Pakistan, right, from Afghanistan. We learned it, and we learned it again, and we learned it a third time. And to some degree, we're still dealing with that issue. We've learned this issue in Vietnam, and it led to the secret war in Cambodia. So it would be, naive to think that one could have a strategy for dealing with ISIS that didn't also deal with ISIS in Syria. And the president said as much during his news conference.
Listeners, does the president have a strategy that involves Syria? Should he have a strategy that involves Syria as we continue to follow the developments from Washington regarding how to respond to the ISIS threat and how big is the ISIS threat? 212-433-WNYC. Daniel in Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, Daniel.
Hi. Back in 2006, when the U.S. government was imposing the Baghdad government on all of Iraq with a Shia majority, the Saudi Arabians told us that they would be creating ISIS. And since the Syrian-Iraq area is one area in that front, it is quite clear what the Saudi Arabians are doing and how they are behind all of this Sunni operation in both those countries.
Daniel, thank you. Do you think there's any truth to what he says? He actually said Saudi Arabia declared their intention to create ISIS in 2006 when the U.S. was helping Shiite control, come to Iraq. How much do you think Saudi Arabia is behind ISIS, if at all?
Well, certainly Saudi Arabia over the years has financed a lot of Sunni extremists, and certainly individual Saudis in addition to the royal family have done that. As we've discussed before, they've often financed the madrasas in Pakistan and elsewhere to train many of these. But let's remember that the Saudi regime considers itself threatened by ISIS as well, just as they considered themselves threatened by Osama bin Laden more than a decade ago, which is why they threw him out of the country. So there is a moment, a crossover threshold, where the Sunni extremist movement becomes a threat to a Saudi leadership that fears for its own stability.
Does the ISIS leadership, which is quite verbal, they tweet and everything else, said anything about Saudi leadership one way or another that you know of publicly?
Yeah, at various moments, some individuals that seem associated with ISIS have said that the Saudi leadership has been corrupted, isn't sufficiently loyal to their version of the Islamic faith, and so forth. But that's not new to ISIS. You've heard that back in early al-Qaeda days.
Olivia in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Olivia.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I feel very strongly. I've been thinking about this for a while now, and would like to start a petition, actually. I would like a leader, a worldwide leader, and I would hope it would be our president, to really call for a worldwide summit immediately to deal with this problem. It is not our problem alone. And if it's going on any longer, it's going to be everybody's problem. So I would like everybody on board to stamp this out right now. It's not our job alone to do this. Is a worldwide threat, and anybody who thinks it isn't, I think, is being naive.
Well, Olivia, you may not need a petition to get President Obama on your page, because David Sanger, there is a NATO meeting that's going to take place tomorrow, and I've read that one of President Obama's prime agendas in going to it is to enlist other countries in the fight against ISIS, so this just doesn't become a U.S. military operation, correct?
That's absolutely correct. And the president was pretty clear in the course of his news conference that this has to be done with allies. But while that sounds good, there are two levels of complication for it. Number one is you need to have allies who feel as committed to this as the United States does. Certainly Britain is, and you could tell from the way they raise the threat level that they consider themselves particularly at risk. But
now, what did they do? I heard something about this, but I don't know the details. I think people will find it interesting. They raised the domestic terrorism threat level within the U.K. As a result of ISIS in Iraq and Syria?
That's right, because of the number of ISIS fighters who hold British or European passports and thus could travel easily into Britain.
Aha, uh-huh. And the guy on the video with the James Foley execution did appear to be an individual who holds a British passport, who is a Brit, right?
That's right, appears to be a Brit.
So they raised the threat level. So Britain isn't invested. Who else is invested?
Well, the other European countries, particularly the large and richer ones, are, but not all 28 NATO members are. Now, the big and interesting question is the other Arab states who could feel themselves threatened, as we discussed with Saudi Arabia. The United Arab Emirates and the Saudis are believed to have taken some action against Libyan extremists just last week. You'll remember that when the attacks on Libya began that ultimately ended up in ousting Muammar Gaddafi, that in that case, the UAE and other Arab states, the Arab League, were all in the game. And that's what gave President Obama a fair bit of comfort. Now, what's this all about? In the old days, it used to be, Brian, that you would just say, if there's a big problem of a military nature, the United States would step in to handle it. But if there is an Obama doctrine that came out of the first term, it was a doctrine that basically said the United States will act individually if our own national interests are directly threatened. But if there's a general good out here, in which the United States has interests, but other countries do as well, others are going to have to take their part of the role as well. And that means doing something more than just signing a piece of paper saying that you are a member of the coalition of the willing. As we heard so often in the Bush administration, you will remember that by the end of the Iraq War, well before the end, or the end of the American participation in it, that became the coalition of the leaving.
So what do you think specifically that would mean that President Obama would ask or demand of Arab and Muslim countries in the Middle East for participation in the fight against ISIS?
That they would put either people on the ground, use air assets, use financial assets, use diplomatic efforts to try to squeeze off ISIS's ability to obtain weapons and money. And the remarkable thing about ISIS is that it has figured out through a combination of kidnappings, drug money, other sources of revenue, how to keep a very well-financed operation going. And if we've learned anything in the past decade or so, it's that until you cut off those sources of supply, you can't actually solve the problem.
David Sanger with us, national security correspondent for the New York Times and author of the book Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, as we talk about what to do about ISIS. 212-433-WNYC. Rick and Edison, you're on WNYC. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how are you doing?
Okay, thank you.
So I guess my comment is that I agree with all the other listeners and what they've been saying, that we also have to, address Syria, and that's a big issue. But I think, as the person before mentioned, the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, have at some point or are still supporting ISIS and other radicalized groups. And initially they were thinking it was beneficial because Syria to kind of topple the Assad regime, and now it's turned into something more sinister. And I don't know if they're still supporting them, but if they are, I think America definitely needs to take a stronger sort of tone with that.
And can I ask, can I tell our listeners that you mentioned to our screener that you're an American living and working in Qatar, you're visiting right now?
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the buzz over there?
Well, the buzz over there, I mean, it's kind of tough to really get real news out of there. Unfortunately, everything is government controlled, and they like to talk very, very blandly about things. They don't really get into detail. But while the Syria Assad, while the revolution was happening in Syria, there was they were constantly talking about sending money and aid and all those things to Syria. So that was very, very well known. And it was very well known that we were sending medicine and money and supplies, but it wasn't well known to exactly whom we were sending them to. So it doesn't take much to make sense that, yes, I mean, I'm sure ISIS or some affiliated groups were getting some of these benefits. And the question is, are they still? And if they are, what can the U.S. do to actually, like, pressure these countries to, not do those kinds of things? And, there was an entire Gulf Cooperation Council that was very much for supporting the revolution and very disappointed with America and Western's reaction to not do much. So, and I think this made them go more into supporting them financially and doing these other things. And I think maybe in the midst of doing that, they supported these terrible organizations such as ISIS, maybe on purpose or inadvertently. I'm not sure, but mm-hmm. I mean, if you pull back and you think about America and how much money and support we're giving these Khaliji countries, these Gulf countries, in terms of weapons and that sort of thing, I think maybe we should reconsider those things, given light of this situation.
Rick, thank you very much for your observations and your insight as somebody actually who is an American working in Qatar and in that region. David, before we run out of time, I heard some discussion over the weekend about the airstrikes that the U.S. is already engaging in there. And people, I guess, from both sides of the aisle on some of the Sunday talk shows saying the airstrikes are working, that there's already one major town or city north of Baghdad that's been taken back by airstrikes alone. What's the word on that from Washington? And is there any sense that airstrikes alone, without talking about boots on the ground from, some quarter, being able to do the job against ISIS sufficiently?
Tactically, they are working to bring this back with our earlier conversation. ISIS has no real air defenses, so they're very vulnerable to this kind of thing. But to take a town back is one thing. To hold it is another. And it's not as if ISIS is not changing its own tactics themselves. So they're beginning to do more of a guerrilla warfare kind of technique in which they integrate inside these towns and become less susceptible to bombing. This is what worked for many in Syria. It was one of the reasons that we couldn't bomb in Syria, and the president obviously stayed out of the Syrian conflict because you just have too many civilian casualties. So you shouldn't take a brief gain as necessarily a solution to the problem.
And to close the loop, the clip about not having a strategy, as we played, was in the context of a question about going to Congress for authorization. Does the president, under the law, have to go to Congress for authorization before he steps this up?
Well, he has been issuing them notifications under, the War Powers Act, and he issues these notifications, and Congress can step in at some point and, cut those off. The fact of the matter is, between now and the congressional elections, everybody in Congress wants to say that they want a voice for Congress, and very few in Congress actually
right.
want to vote on
but
it.
But under the War right. Powers Act, there is a 60-day clock, right, which
That's
would expire
right.
on, I think it's October 7th. And so by then what? Can the president get away with just telling them what he's going to do, or does then he have to ask Congress for approval for something?
It would seem that he could do this in a rolling way, and I'm not a lawyer on these issues. But as long as he's issuing these notifications, then Congress would have to sort of affirmatively step in and take a vote and express a view on this. I think it's highly unlikely that you're going to see that happen.
David Sanger, national security correspondent for the New York Times and author of Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, still to be determined how much American power comes to bear on
That's
ISIS
right.
in Syria and Iraq. David, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, New York Times sports columnist Harvey Araton on his new novel, Cold Type, and we may touch on some U.S. Open and other real-life sports as well. Stay with us.